Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM, Descanso, recording at our studio in the East County Wellness Center in El Cajon. After 4 long years of drought, we may have a wet winter coming, and we'll tell you why on today's show. Plus, hear about the impacts a hurricane off Baja may have on the San Diego region this very weekend. On Green Scene, we've got news about some major actions that San Diego Unified School District is taking to help fight climate change. Plus, we'll have a trashy story about how the city of San Diego is setting its sights on reducing its landfill waste to zero. From Sacramento, hear about a resolution denouncing anti-Semitism that's been passed by the state legislature. And then on our Capitol Report, learn about efforts by Republicans in Congress to punish sanctuary cities if they fail to turn over undocumented immigrants with violent criminal offenses to federal authorities. On Crime Beat, hear about a serial child molester who's been arrested in El Cajon. And then you'll hear about a revolt staged by Water District shareholders out in Pine Valley who are trying to reverse their district's decision to sell 5 million gallons of Pine Valley water to a newly formed water company in Boulevard, Rough Acres, that's really a front for a developer seeking water for a massive and controversial energy project. On Destination East County, we've got all the hottest festivals and fun events in town coming up this week, from a pop rock musical review to Jimmy Johnson Night in El Cajon and the Pine Valley Days Parade. Plus, we'll have previews of coming attractions, such as outdoor movies and a watermelon festival at the Oasis Camel Dairy. We'll also be replaying our interview with representatives from the San Diego Concert Band and Water Conservation Garden about a big benefit concert for their organizations that's coming up soon. On the heels of Comic-Con, hear about efforts to make a comic book collection at San Diego State more accessible to students and researchers. And we've got a cautionary tale for hikers after a nighttime hiker had a close encounter with a mountain lion in Mission Trails Regional Park. On Jobs Talk, learn about a new bill to help grocery store workers keep their jobs when a store is sold. And then from Public News Service, we'll have the latest news from Sacramento on an immigrant's health bill. So stay tuned for these stories and more on today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show on KNSJ, where East County matters.
This is Leon Thompson with a long-range weather update from Times of San Diego. An El Niño ocean warming cycle is strengthening in the Pacific and could produce a wet winter for drought-stricken Southern California. The National Oceanic Atmospheric Administration updated its official forecast last week, saying there is a greater than 90% chance that a pattern will continue through the winter. In the new forecast, NOAA states nearly all models predict El Niño to continue into the Northern Hemisphere winter 2015 and 2016, with many multi-model averages predicting a strong event. And El Niño is a warming of the Pacific's normal surface temperature by an average of over half a degree centigrade. It is associated with significantly wetter winters in the Southwest United States, including Central and Southern California. As of July 1st, ocean temperatures are more than a full degree above normal. El Niño is the warm phase of periodic warming and cooling of the Pacific off South America. This cycle is officially called El Niño Southern Oscillation, or ENSO. The term El Niño, which is Spanish for the Christ Child, arose because fishermen first noticed the warm ocean water around Christmas time.
This is DeVario Bell with the Weekend Weather Report. Hurricane Dolores is moving north off the Pacific coast of Mexico, the National Weather Service reports. Moisture from the monsoon will bring a chance of showers and thunderstorms this weekend across San Diego County. Additionally, Dolores will generate a large southerly swell that could produce big surf and strong rip currents on the beaches beginning this weekend. So use caution and check the latest weather reports before heading to the beach or planning other outdoor activities.
Welcome to East County Magazine Show's Jobs Talk, bringing you news about great jobs, job training opportunities, and growing our regional economy. This is Miriam Raftery with a Green Scene Report. San Diego Unified School District voted unanimously at its July 14th meeting to adopt the resolution supporting development of a district-wide climate action plan, or CAP, in alignment with the City of San Diego's CAP. Nicole Capritz, Executive Director of Climate Action Campaign and author of the City's Climate Action Plan, praised the action. She applauded the school district for using the City of San Diego's draft climate action plan as a model for its own, because, she said, San Diego's plan will make us a world leader on climate action, adding, the CAP gives San Diegans more transportation options and will create a 100% clean energy future. The Parent Teacher Association last year identified climate change as a children's issue, with the school board adopting a resolution in December in support of the PTA Climate Change Initiative. Kath Rogers of Climate Action Campaign said the Climate Watchdog Group is thrilled that the school district recognizes that climate change is a children's issue, adding, the brunt of the health impacts of climate change will be felt by those who are already vulnerable, especially children. A major goal of the San Diego Unified School District is to reduce its energy costs while increasing usage of sustainable energy sources. Energy rates have increased over 49% since 2009, according to the district. The district has identified community choice aggregation as an option which may help the district reduce energy costs and buy more clean energy. The school district plans to partner with the City of San Diego on a feasibility study looking at alternative energy sources through a potential community choice aggregation plan, district officials have said. If the district establishes community choice aggregation, it would enable it to purchase energy from more sustainable sources, such as local solar, which would help achieve the city's goal of reaching 100% renewable energy by 2035. San Diego Unified continues to work on its own solar energy installations, LED lighting conversions, maximizing water conservation, buying local produce and other foods, establishing and joining large purchasing cooperatives, improving transportation sustainability, and supporting the use of school gardens. San Diego Unified is also working to embed sustainability education for students and employees into everyday teaching and learning.
This is Ed Barrena with some trashy news. San Diego City Council has unanimously approved a landmark measure to cut trash and landfills to zero. To attain zero waste by 2040, the city aims to encourage more recycling of items ranging from construction waste to household items, and also to develop new markets for goods with recycled materials as well as compost. The plan also includes increasing fees to discourage trash dumping. The city has already slashed trash at its Miramar landfill from 1.3 million tons in 1998 to 865,000 tons in 2014. Other major cities, including New York, Los Angeles, and San Francisco, have adopted similar zero-waste ordinances after the U.S. Conference of Mayors voted to urge all cities to do so. Mayor Kevin Falconer said reducing waste to zero is something we should 100% support, the San Diego Union-Tribune reports. Also, Councilman David Alvarez observed that the measure could save taxpayers money by extending the life of the Miramar landfill. One thing the city can't do currently is charge residents for trash pickup or fine those who fail to recycle under a nearly century-old people's ordinance. The San Diego Taxpayer Association, which usually opposes any suggestion of tax hikes, has said it supports amending the outdated law to help the city attain zero waste.
The California State Assembly has approved a resolution to condemn any act of anti-Semitism at all publicly funded schools in California, including University of California and California State University campuses. The measure, State Concurrent Resolution 35, was authored by State Senator Jeff Stone, a Republican for Riverside. It passed the State Senate last month and now goes to the governor for signature. The resolution was introduced after it became clear that acts of anti-Semitism are on the rise in California and across the United States. Examples of anti-Semitic acts have included Nazi swastikas being spray painted on a Jewish fraternity at UC Davis, and Zionists should be sent to the gas chamber scrawled on a bathroom wall at UC Berkeley after an anti-Israel protest. Senator Stone says SCR 35 sends a clear message that bigotry and hatred of Jewish people should not be tolerated in California, and the Assembly's passage of this important message sends a clear message that hate of any religion is not to be tolerated. He adds, in a world where Jewish people are being persecuted every day because of their religious beliefs, California just sent a message that such behavior should never be condoned and should always be condemned. While free speech should be embraced, hate speech and anti-Semitism should be abhorred. The resolution, which includes both Republican and Democrat co-authors, passed both houses unanimously and had 75 co-authors. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is DeVario Bell.
This is East County Magazine's Capitol Report, bringing you the latest news and newsmakers from our nation's capital.
House Republicans are seeking to block sanctuary cities from receiving certain federal grants. The House Appropriations Committee has added such language into a funding measure for Homeland Security, Associated Press reports. The committee also seeks to halt Immigration and Customs Enforcement from releasing detained illegal immigrants with criminal records before deporting them. In addition, Congressman Duncan D. Hunter, a Republican representing much of the East County, has announced plans to introduce a bill that would cut federal funds to any city, county, or state that has enacted laws to prevent enforcement of federal immigration law, Times of San Diego reports. The measures come in response to the fatal shooting of Kate Steinle at the San Francisco waterfront by Juan Francisco Lopez Sanchez, an undocumented immigrant with 5 prior felony arrests. San Francisco, a sanctuary city, did not notify federal officials of Sanchez's release despite pending deportation orders. Meanwhile, San Francisco's mayor has announced plans to cooperate with the federal government for deportation of immigrants with a history of violent crimes, a small percentage of the total immigrant population. A statement from Hunter reads, quote, "States and cities that refuse to enforce federal immigration laws directly undermine enforcement efforts and, as recent events have shown, present a real danger to citizens," unquote. California Senator Dianne Feinstein, a Democrat, has also spoken out to denounce San Francisco's sheriff for failing to notify Immigration and Customs Enforcement to allow them to remove him from the country. She urged local officials to prevent such a tragedy from happening again by participating in a new priority enforcement program that the U.S. Department of Homeland Security is rolling out this summer, already in the works under President Obama's 2014 executive order on immigration reforms. San Francisco Mayor Ed Lee's spokesperson Christine Falvey confirmed that the mayor's office has reached out to Homeland Security to learn how participation in the priority enforcement program can help prevent future tragedies, the San Francisco Chronicle reports. Falvey confirmed by saying that the city's sanctuary ordinance does not prohibit local law enforcement from contacting authorities and that the mayor has always maintained that our sanctuary status does not create a safe haven for people convicted of serious or violent felonies. The sanctuary city's controversy comes on the heels of national attention drawn to inflammatory anti-immigrant remarks made by presidential candidate Donald Trump. Trump said last month that illegal immigrants crossing the U.S.-Mexico border are in large part, quote, "rapists and murderers," unquote. But in fact, the Washington Post reports immigrants are actually less likely to commit crimes than people born here in the U.S. According to Pew Research, quote, "the crime rate among first-generation immigrants, those who came to this country from somewhere else, is significantly lower than the overall crime rate and that of the second generation," unquote. Currently, there are at least 60 sanctuary cities in the U.S., including such major cities as New York, Los Angeles, and Houston. The laws arose to protect immigrants from being separated from families after criticism arose that some local jurisdictions were jailing immigrants as a revenue source, billing the federal government for services, and also potentially violating international human rights accords, the Washington Post reports. Some were exported without notification to family members, resulting in people disappearing with no explanation. Civil liberties groups have also called this a means of racial and ethnic profiling. Most immigrants were picked up for minor traffic violations and had no criminal records. Federal courts did order the deportation of some 415,000 people from 2011 through 2013, and some sanctuary cities are cooperating with federal authorities to export violent offenders. Of those being protected in sanctuary cities, some are awaiting immigration hearings, and others have applied for asylum after overstaying visitor or student visas. Asylum is sought when an immigrant's life would be in danger or the immigrant would face persecution if they returned home. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Ed Barrena.
This is Jawan Armstrong with a Crime Beat report. An Oklahoma chiropractor, Dr. Mace Richter, has pleaded not guilty to 42 counts related to insurance fraud. According to court documents, Richter allegedly made false claims to insurance companies, and some patients reported that their insurance companies were charged for visits that never happened. Our news partner 10 News broke the news in February, and Richter's lawyer, Gretchen Vaughn Helms, told 10 News her client is innocent until proven guilty. She emphasized this involves allegations over billing and not causing injury or pain to any of his patients. Richter is expected in court next month for trial. The Board of Chiropractor Examiners is reportedly investigating whether to revoke Richter's license.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM, Descanso.
With water running short across the state, tensions are building where local water districts are being asked to share precious water supplies with neighboring districts and developers. Directors of the Pine Valley Mutual Water Company found themselves in hot water with shareholders over the board's decision to sell up to 5 million gallons of water to the newly formed Rough Acres Water Company in Boulevard. Rough Acres Ranch wants to build an industrial-scale solar facility that needs massive amounts of water, but Boulevard doesn't have enough groundwater. So when Pine Valley shareholders, the residents who rely on water from Pine Valley Wells, found out about the sale, tempers at the latest shareholder meeting reached the boiling point. As this tape, provided to East County Magazine by Charlene Ayers from the Ranter's Roost online discussion group, shows. Flip Borman, manager of the Pine Valley Mutual Water Company, tried to open the meeting with election of new board members. But shareholders had a different idea, proposed by Tom Hendricks.
Sir, my name is Tom Hendricks. I'm a retired Superior Court judge. I just moved here. It would seem logical that if we're going to vote for these two candidates that we discuss first the reason why we're all here, and that is the contract to sell the water to Boulevard.
With all due respect, sir, we're going to go down into the agenda as you normally do. If you're a court judge, you'll know what agenda is all about. With all due respect, I say that.
I say point of order. You think we need to know their positions on this subject. We need to hear from the board as to why you're doing this before we vote or close the nominations.
Let me say this. We're going to go down to nominations. This will all be addressed. Okay?
After the vote.
Borman refused that request, leading to this testy exchange.
This is a shareholders' meeting.
You don't have to hold to an agenda.
We do.
Shareholders learned of the controversial water sale after getting an inflammatory letter passed out to neighbors and signed by the Committee to Save Pine Valley Water. It stated, "Our neighbors to the east are being surrounded with solar electric facilities that disturb their environment, and now our Pine Valley Water Company is going to sell our water to the contractors responsible for causing that mess." The letter also cited the statewide drought as a concern and urged citizens to show up at the shareholders' meeting. Borman responded by claiming the letter had exaggerated the amount of water to be sold.
There's a lot of accusations in this letter that you guys, I've got to be honest, you're deceived over. You've been deceived.
The letter claimed that up to 6 million gallons a month could be sold to Rough Acres, but Borman said the total is actually 5 million gallons maximum, not per month. He also disputed claims made about the number of trucks hauling water through local neighborhoods. But that didn't appease the crowd, concerned not only over the amount of water sold, but the secrecy of the decision-making process.
Why didn't we vote on this?
Your website has nothing on it about the contract.
Shareholders repeatedly pressed for more details of the contract, so Borman described the terms of the sale to Rough Acres.
No, we don't care about the letter.
We want to know how you did the contract, why you did the contract, and you're talking about the bylaws. And the opening article of the bylaw says that the water is to be sold to shareholders of Pine Valley and the state,
that's
or
the
agencies
bylaw.
Thereof.
But if you look at the corporate code, we supersede the bylaw.
We have looked at the corporate code, and the corporate code says that the bylaws should be in conformance with the corporate code.
The bylaws are a guideline.
They're not a guideline, they're the bylaws.
You can challenge it in a court of law, but I'm
we'd rather talk to the board, actually.
The corporate codes allow us to sell to schools, to fire departments, to government agencies, to mutual water companies, to private individuals if we so choose. You do not have to be a member to get water from us. It's a company. The bylaws allow us under conditions to sell water. Last year, no one here complained when we sold water to Wausau.
Yes, we did. The whole valley was talking about
Selling water to Wausau.
No, not the Bronco, but when the trucks came in and out of here all day, every day, hauling the water.
Last year?
Yeah,
last year.
Caltrans project.
Last when? No, that was not last year. Well, last year we were selling water to Guatai Mutual Water Company. That was not objected. We have now agreed to sell water to Rough Acres Mutual Water.
How many residents is that?
Rough Acres has 10,000 memberships.
Memberships? Memberships. How many residents does it serve?
I do not know. That's not.
Doesn't serve a one. Let's get to the details of what this is.
Let's get to the facts here.
Tom Biggers then posed a challenge to Borman.
Solar projects out there that want our water. Now, I went to your office and asked you a question. I want you to answer in front of everybody. I said, if Rough Acres buys our water, can they sell to anybody our water? And you said yes. Do you want to say yes now, or do you want to say no?
Borman explained that once a water company is formed, it can resell water to others and even sell back to the original agency under mutual aid in case of a disaster. He provided more details and insisted that Pine Valley has plenty of water from multiple wells not currently being used to supply residents.
We signed a contract with Rough Acres that extended from 2014 for 5 years. We are now 1 year into it, so there's less than 4 years left. We signed a contract to provide to them up to 5 million gallons, period. Up to 5 million gallons, period. The 5 million gallons was to be used in a 90-day period. Not outside that, no extension. The ability for us to sell that 5 million gallons is at our discretion. Okay? We do not have to give them 5 million. We can sell them, just wait, we can sell them 150,000. We can sell them 250,000. We can sell them 4 million. The water that is sold to them is not used from any of the wells that we currently provide water to our customers from. Okay? It is not 6 million gallons a day for 5 years per month. Okay? It is not 6 million gallons a day for 5 years per month. It is not 800 trucks coming into Pine Valley per day for 12 months a year for 5 years. It is 5 million gallons total. This is dictated to us by the county. They said that is the limit you will sell. We will not allow that outside. And they put in safeguards to prevent us from doing any damage to our system. They will be monitoring levels in Pine Creek. They will be monitoring levels in our other wells. If those levels exceed certain drawdowns, the county will stop us. This is not an open-ended, you can sell all the water you want to anybody you want. I've been here 35 years. This is my whole life is building this company with the board and the different staff we've had. We've never done anything that is cause you guys to go dry. We are probably the only water district you'll see in San Diego County that's not requiring their customers to cut back 25%.
Maybe we should.
Why?
We're in a drought.
But that still didn't satisfy many present. Several times during the meeting, shareholders tried to force a vote, but Borman repeatedly held them off.
We didn't sell the water. Mm-hmm. The rates would go up. I presume that's really the reality of the situation.
I would say we're going to have to make up that shortfall somewhere else.
Okay, so if we have to make that shortfall up somewhere else,
right.
Likely it would go on the users on their rates.
Correct.
And if the users want to suck up that cost, shouldn't we give them the opportunity to vote on that?
Yeah.
Borman then revealed that the idea of selling water for the Boulevard solar development wasn't Pine Valley Mutual Water's idea, and he further revealed that despite the developer's claims of ample water supplies, the county thinks otherwise.
The reason Jim Bennett and the County of San Diego approached us on this was because they were worried about the groundwater impact on the community of Boulevard, and they wanted to minimize that. So they said, will you sell to them?
Biggers again called for a vote to be held by all the shareholders.
Why don't we do this? Why don't we send out a ballot to the shareholders, and on that ballot, do you want to sell your water only to Pine Valley shareholders, or do you want to sell it to outside people too?
Yes.
And let us vote on it. It's simple.
Let's see how it turns out.
I second that motion.
Several shareholders objected to the developer setting up a water district as a front to secure water for its unpopular project, which Boulevard's planning group voted unanimously to oppose, but county supervisors approved. Rough Acres would also be free to resell the water to others.
Even the fact that they have a water, mutual water district's a fraud.
In fact, if you pierce the whole thing, it's a developer who creates a well and then creates a corporation so he can buy other people's water.
Others in the audience voiced fears over water supplies running short after 4 years of statewide drought, despite assurances from Borman that Pine Valley has plenty of water.
Water's water. We are in a drought. When you fly in, it's dry. And that's what I think most of everybody's concern is, because when I have children, I want to be able to have the house and have them here. I don't know why I understand we're talking about selling it, but I don't think we should be selling anything. We're in a severe drought everywhere.
One shareholder astutely observed that without the water sale to Rough Acres to bring in revenues for the district, water rates would likely rise for the residents. But most here wanted to let the people decide whether they would rather pay more to assure that Pine Valley water stays in Pine Valley. A discussion ensued over whether the shareholders wanted to block all water sales, such as those recently made to the nearby town of Coate that was running out of water, or just block the Rough Acres sale alone. The majority present agreed to limit any ballot question to only the Rough Acres project. Another issue is what happens if a majority of the 769 Water District members don't vote. Should a minority of voters be able to undo a board decision? One shareholder noted that the board's own elections are typically decided by a minority of members. Legal counsel will be consulted on that issue, it was decided. If Pine Valley does opt to pull the plug on its water sales to Rough Acres, it could leave Boulevard's proposed solar project developer in a rough spot, coming up 5 million gallons short of the water needed in a project that has already weathered rocky ground after Soytech sold off its soy interests and Boulevard residents raised objections over destruction of meadows and wildlife habitat at the gateway to McCain Valley, a public recreational area. Borman objected to the cost of a mailing to all 769 households, and Biggers then offered to chip in on the cost of the mailing. Ultimately, Borman agreed to send out the ballot and let the shareholders have the final decision after hearing this impassioned pitch.
The board has made a decision that the vast majority of us shareholders disagree with, which means they're not representing us. Okay? So, I think that it's been mentioned here, let's let the shareholders decide. 51% say sell it, sell it. If you don't get 51%, we got 90 days. We notify this Rough Acres, and in 90 days this contract is void. It's in the contract. So we can void this contract. But I want Pine Valley water to stay in Pine Valley.
Yes.
Okay, I don't think we need to be providing everybody. Our creeks are drying. Our old trees that are 5 to 1,000 years old are all dying because of the lack of water. We're in a drought. Let's keep our water here for us.
Okay. Yay.
All right? And I
second the motion. But when it came to electing the board, Borman and the rest of the board never allowed a vote to be held on the floor of the annual meeting. Instead, Borman advised shareholders late in the meeting that all votes were counted before the meeting began and that the incumbents had won re-election. According to Bob Ames Smith, one of those shareholders, he asked Borman to see the ballots, and he told East County Magazine he refused to show us the results. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Miriam Raftery.
You're listening to East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM, Descanso.
The East County Magazine Show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interest, not special interest. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. The East County Magazine Show airs Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays on KNSJ from 5 o'clock to 6 o'clock p.m. You can listen live at 89.1 FM or online at knsj.org. You can also listen anywhere by downloading the TuneIn application for your smartphone. For details, visit tunein.com.
See you around, East County. This week's Destination East County features a movie under the moonlight, Jimmy Johnson Night, and Mary Poppins on Mount Helix.
Plus, we'll have a preview of coming attractions, including Pine Valley Days, hops and hike on Volcan Mountain, music in the garden, and more.
So stay tuned for all of these events and much, much more. Can you say supercalifragilisticexpialidocious? Christian Community Theater San Diego celebrates its 35th anniversary at the beautiful Mount Helix Park Amphitheater with this summer's production of Mary Poppins. Enjoy an evening with everyone's favorite nanny weekends in July through August 2nd. For more information or to purchase tickets, visit cctsandiego.org.
Visionary Youth Theater presents Pop Rock, a musical review featuring pop and rock, celebrating music of the 80s. The performances will be held at the Visionary Performance Space at 7202 El Cajon Boulevard in San Diego, just east of La Mesa, on July 16th through 18th at 7 p.m. and July 19th at 2 p.m. The upbeat, fun, dance-heavy musical review will have cast members rocking and popping to the sounds of the 80s. You may want to jump up and start jamming when you hear songs from Madonna, Michael Jackson, the Go-Go's, and many more. There's also an ultimate dance party and 80s dress-up contest on Saturday, July 18th, for those who donate $5 to help the theater move to a new location. For tickets and details, visit visionarydancetheater.org.
Grossmont Center in La Mesa invites you to enjoy a free movie, Under the Moonlight. Madagascar will be showing on July 17th at 7:30 p.m. in the courtyard. Bring a comfy chair for a show, which starts at dusk around 7:30 or 8 p.m. Bare Naked Ladies will be live in concert on Sunday, July 19th at the Cal Coast Credit Union Open Air Theater at San Diego State University. Bare Naked Ladies is a Canadian alternative rock band with popular singles including If I Had $1 Million, The Old Apartment, Brian Wilson, 1 Week, and the theme song for the TV show The Big Bang Theory. For more details and ticket pricing, visit Ticketmaster.com.
El Cajon will host Jimmy Johnson Night during its Cajon Classic Cruises on Wednesday, July 22nd from 5:30 to 8 p.m., honoring the 5-time NASCAR champion and hometown hero. See downtownelcajon.com for more information.
Lemon Grove's Summer Concert Series will present AM Forever on Thursday, July 23rd. This free community concert will be held in the Berry Street Park from 6:30 to 8 p.m. Now, for a preview of coming attractions.
Big Hero will be the feature film at Lemon Grove's next movie in the park on Friday, July 24th. The showing will begin at dark in the Berry Street Park at 7071 Mount Vernon Street, Lemon Grove.
If you're looking for a reason for a weekend road trip, you can hop on up to Julian for hikes and hops with Vulcan Mountain Foundation and Anza Borrego Desert Foundation on July 25th. Participants will receive a voucher for beer at Nickel Beer Company and a taste of Anza Borrego brew after the hike, which will cover 6 miles with scenic views and cool shaded groves. For more information, visit the Anza Borrego Desert Foundation website at abf.org.
The Mountain Empire Men's Club will present Pine Valley Days on July 24th and 25th. This mountain town's annual summer event includes a parade rolling out on July 25th at 9 a.m., plus other activities both days at the Pine Valley Park. The fun begins with a deep pit barbecue dinner on Friday night with live music and dancing under the stars to Barbed Wire, the North American Country Music Association International's New Country Band of the Year for 2015, and other entertainers. There will also be a craft village, a free music festival, kids zone, food from local vendors, and more. For details, visit pinevalleydays.com.
If you're looking for a stirring summertime musical experience, the San Diego Concert Band will be performing at the Water Conservation Garden on the campus of Cuyamaca College on July 26th at 6 p.m. An evening of music at the garden will benefit both of these nonprofit organizations. Guests are welcome to come early for a stroll through the gardens to learn some tips on how to have beautiful low-water gardens. The outdoor concert at the garden will also feature light classics, historical themes, and modern compositions. For tickets and details, visit sandiegoconcertband.com.
The Stony Bee Blues Band will perform a free concert on July 26th at Harry Griffin Park in La Mesa at 6 p.m. It's all part of La Mesa's Concert at 6 Summer Music Series.
The Oasis Camel Dairy in Ramona invites you to Watermelon Days on July 31st from 1 to 7 p.m. Visitors can enjoy feeding watermelons to camels, as well as a camel show, exotic bird show, barbecue, camel rides, and more. For tickets and details, visit cameldairy.com.
That's all for this week. You can find details on all these events and more on our calendar and in our festivals and events section online at eastcountymagazine.org.
If you have an event you'd like added to our calendar, or if you would like to sponsor the Destination East County column on our website or the Destination East County show on KNSJ Radio, you can contact editor at eastcountymagazine.org. Destination East County is the most read feature on our website.
We'll be back next week with more festivals, events, and attractions in San Diego's East County.
See you around, East County.
Ladies and gentlemen, the San Diego Concert Band, under the direction of Roy S. Anthony Jr.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording in our studio in the East County Wellness Center here in El Cajon. Today, my very special guests are Chuck Brown, who is the president of the San Diego Concert Band, and John Bolthouse, the executive director of the Water Conservation Garden. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Miriam.
Thanks for having us.
John, I understand that you have an announcement about a very special event that's coming up at the Garden in July. Tell us about it.
Yeah, we're very pleased for our third straight year to host the San Diego Concert Band on Sunday, July 26th. This is a great community event. It's also a fundraiser, a joint fundraiser between the Water Conservation Garden out in El Cajon and the San Diego Concert Band. And it's a great way to enjoy the summertime in a great botanical garden, an outdoor setting with friends and family, and some really wonderful music by a great community band.
That sounds marvelous, and benefiting two very worthy causes here in East County in San Diego. The concert begins at 6 p.m., and the gates open at 4:30 for those that want to come early and stroll through the gardens. Now, Chuck, can you give us a little preview of what we can expect to hear at the concert?
Well, the band's summer series typically are lighter, more popular music that people are more familiar with. We're playing some exciting arrangements by three different Japanese composers, one of which is Moonlight Serenade, the famous Glenn Miller standard.
Oh, yes.
We're also doing another piece that is straight out of New Orleans. It's a street composition of When the Saints Go Marching In, which includes the typical go to the mortuary funeral beginning, and then the much more uplifting saints type thing when they're going back from the funeral proceedings. And we're doing some popular American marches like Chimes of Liberty. We're doing another exciting piece from the U.S. Air Force Band. It's the theme song for the Air and Space Museum in Washington, D.C. called Flight. A very interesting piece. So there'll be a lot of stuff that people are familiar with, and we'll introduce some new stuff that people hopefully will like.
Fascinating. And I understand one of those new pieces is by a local composer.
Yes. Each year, our band director, Roy Anthony, chooses a fanfare opening that we can use, kind of like the call to post at Del Mar for bands. And this year, he commissioned Adam Pezdek, who's a trombonist with us, also recently retired Marine Corps musician, who was in Roy Anthony's high school band at Mount Miguel High School. Adam's piece, the commissioned fanfare, is titled Matador Mountain. And as you might expect, being a Mount Miguel High School Matador alumni, there's a little bit of Spanish influence and fanfare trumpetry and lots of stuff like that for the opener. We've been playing it all summer, and people really seem to enjoy it.
Well, that sounds very exciting. We're going to listeners give you a little sneak preview of that piece, the fanfare Matador Mountain, right now.
Thank you.
for sharing. That was marvelous. I'm really looking forward to coming and hearing the whole thing at the concert coming up at the Garden on July 26th at 6 p.m.
We're looking forward to you and your radio listeners being there.
Very good. Now, I want to talk a little bit more about the band itself, which has quite an impressive history. Tell us a little bit about how it all got started and some of the milestones you've had through the years, Chuck.
The band was founded in fall of 1989, and it was originally based in Villa Mesa area at Grossmont High School, and we've rehearsed variously at Grossmont, Helix, and now at La Mesa Middle School. The band's membership, however, is from all over the county. We have people traveling from Rancho Bernardo, Point Loma, South Bay, and of course a lot of East County musicians as well from Spring Valley, El Cajon, La Mesa, and Rancho San Diego. The band has played a consistent series of concerts every year. We have two formal concerts at Joan Kroc Theater in East San Diego at the Salvation Army Corps facility. And we do six or eight summer concerts, typically free in the park around town.
You just had one at La Mesa. The concert's at six out there. And our reviewer, Jaime Meerman with East County Magazine, wrote of the band, "Their love of music shows in the quality of their interpretations, their discipline, and the warmth of the sound they project."
And we thank Jaime for those wonderful words. We've been playing in that particular venue, a nice amphitheater, as is the Water Conservation Garden, ever since 1990, when the trees in the park were no taller than our tallest musician, who happened to be 6 feet seven. And it's always a pleasure. We opened the summer series there this year again, and we're always happy to play in that venue.
Very nice. I understand that you are in the running for a National Sousa Award. You certainly do a marvelous job with the Sousa marches when you play them. Tell us the progress that you're making toward the award.
The John Philip Sousa Foundation has a special awards program for community bands called the Sudler Silver Scroll. And in order to apply for the distinction and be awarded the Silver Scroll, it takes 3 years to compile programs, musical excerpts, a demonstration CD, publicity, reviews like Mr. Meerman's, and everything like that. So we're in the second of 3 years of putting all this together. And it's not so much a competition as it is a recognition. The foundation may or may not award any Silver Scroll awards any particular year, and sometimes they may award more than one.
Listeners, if you just tuned in, we are speaking with Chuck Brown, the president of the San Diego Concert Band, and John Bolthouse, the executive director at the Water Conservation Garden, about the upcoming An Evening of Music in the Garden event on July 26th at 6 p.m. Now, John, for those who may not be familiar with the Water Conservation Garden, can you tell us a little bit about it, its mission, and how it got started?
Well, Miriam, I guess the quickest way to put it is, remember the last drought we were in?
if you're
from San Diego, back in the late 80s.
Filling those buckets up from the shower.
Oh, you did it back then. Okay. So you were a leader back then too. Well, as a consequence of that drought back in the late 80s, early 90s, a couple of the water agencies, got together. Otay and Helix got together with Cuyamaca College and said, you know what? Let's put together a demonstration garden for our community to show folks how they can do it the right way. In their landscaping, to plant California native water-wise drought-tolerant plants, and how you can save water and still have a beautiful landscape. So that was kind of the founding of the garden. We opened to the public in 1999, so we've been open for about 16 years now.
Yeah.
Over that time, we've garnered additional support in the community. We have a very robust volunteer corps, almost 100 volunteers at the garden. We've grown our programs. We've enhanced and expanded our demonstration exhibits at the garden. So we are really making a name for ourselves, not just in East County, but also in the entire region.
Yeah, it's certainly a beautiful place with a lot that you can learn there. How many acres do you have?
We are just under 6 acres. So we do a lot with a very modest space right adjacent to Cuyamaca College.
Yeah, and it's more than water conservation now, although that's certainly extremely important, probably even more so than when you first opened your doors. You can also, listeners, learn about fire-wise landscaping and a lot of other things, vegetable gardening and all kinds of stuff. And, you know, it's important. A lot of people don't realize that the two, water conservation and FireWise landscaping, aren't necessarily the same. We had a house once where there were some slope stability issues, and we went out and planted for that. And we said, we want to make sure we get something that's really drought tolerant. And after we put it in, someone said, well, you know, those are flammable, don't you? They're one of the worst things from a fire stump. I went, oh, no. So it's really good to cross-check both of them when you're planting up your yard.
That's an excellent point. Actually, yeah. It's all about the types of plants you use. And with regards to erosion control and with regards to fire-wise gardening, it's all about where you put them. And we actually have a couple of demonstration gardens for both of those, erosion and fire-wise. The other key in proper gardening, particularly here in Southern California in our semi-arid conditions, is proper irrigation. You can put the best water-conserving plants in your landscape, spend lots of money, but if you don't use the right irrigation, you're just wasting your time. So you want to make sure water gets right to the root of your plants, and only to the root of your plants. There's no need to spray water all over the place and waste our water by having it evaporate. Mm-hmm. So we have all those types of demonstrations at the garden, both in our programs and in our demonstration gardens.
And I understand for people who love butterflies and native plants, you've got some new exhibits to share. Tell us about those.
Yeah, last spring we opened our butterfly pavilion, and just a couple weeks ago we opened our new native habitat garden. And this is a kind of a direction that more and more landscape architects are going, which is ecology landscaping.
Yeah.
Is planting, putting plants in your home or HOA or commercial properties that can supplement or complement the local habitat. I mean, you as a homeowner can have a positive impact on the local ecology. And so we have these two popular new exhibits that help folks learn how to do that. And by the way, it's also really neat to bring kids and families to see all the butterflies as well.
They love it. Children and butterflies, you know, just made for each other. I think we had a butterfly garden ourselves at our old house, and my kids just loved watching those butterflies hatch out of a chrysalis and learning a lot about nature.
The science behind it is fascinating for all ages, actually, yes.
Yeah. Back to you, Chuck. Can you tell us what else the San Diego Concert Band has coming up this season?
Yes. Besides our concert on the 26th at the Garden, we are also playing again at Balboa Park at the Organ Pavilion in the Balboa Park Twilight in the Park series that runs every summer for about 3 months. Every Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday night, there's free entertainment at the park. The Organ Pavilion's a great venue. The good sunshine, early evening, great place to go. Another place you can take a picnic if you'd like. We'll be playing there on August 11th, mm-hmm. and the concerts this season begin at 6:30 p.m. and run for about an hour. After that, we're going to be playing a very late concert in September. It will actually be the closer for the Sundays at 6 series at Griffin Park in La Mesa. We're combining with the Delta Music Makers from Ladner, British Columbia. Ladner is a little town south of Vancouver. They host a band festival every year, and we've been corresponding with them. They'd like to get our band to their festival in Vancouver, and they're making a Southern California tour, and they wanted to swing by San Diego and play a joint concert with us. So it'll be two bands for the price of one, free.
Well, very good. It sounds like you've got a very versatile repertoire and some amazing programs coming up this summer. Where can people go to get ticket information about the concerts coming up this summer, including the one we've been speaking about, the concert on the 26th of July at the Water Conservation Garden?
All of our concerts are free in the venues that we play, except for the Water Conservation Garden. And being a joint fundraiser, we obviously have to have donations to raise funds.
Mm-hmm.
Tickets are available live at the garden in their gift shop and from band members. But more simply, you can go to the San Diego Concert Band website, www.sandiegoconcertband.com, and there's a link there to our ticket sales, and you'll be able to get an electronic ticket from the web right there.
Very good. And John, if people want to learn more about the Water Conservation Garden, not just the concert, but all of the wonderful programs that you have there, maybe come visit, where can they go to find that?
Well, that's very easy. It is at thegarden.org. And we also actually have a very active, dynamic Facebook presence as well. So you can actually track us on Facebook and on Twitter. But as Chuck said, we also welcome folks to come out to the garden. Like I said, we're right adjacent to Queen Maka College. You can get an idea of all the various programs that we offer as well, many of which are free to our members.
Very good. I want to thank both of you so much for joining us today on the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ.
Thank you.
Thanks.
You're listening to East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM, Descanso. Perhaps not surprising in a city known for hosting Comic-Con, San Diego State University's Comic Arts Collection is one of the fastest growing academic comic collections on the West Coast. San Diego State University's News Center reports, the colorful collection includes over 20,000 comics from popular protagonists to counterculture comedy spanning the 1930s to the present. Librarian Pamela Jackson says comics tackle every subject. They really reflect societal and political views of the time. So when you trace the history of comics, you really get a feel for what was happening at the time. The comic collection does more than entertain students. It also serves as a haven for academic research and science fiction scholars. The collection includes vintage, rare, and valuable comics. Now SDSU's Comic Arts Committee hopes to create a space within the library to house a collection, much of which is now in archives, and add a publicly browsable database to make these comic treasures easily accessible for students, professors, and researchers. Comic fans wishing to be superheroes for the university's efforts can donate to the Comic Arts Committee via their website. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Leon Thompson.
A mountain lion apparently protecting her cubs startled a pair of hikers Thursday night at the Mission Trails Regional Park. Mike Smith told 10 News that he was wearing a headlamp on the trail when he spotted a reflection and then heard a sound that he described as being like kittens, kind of like meowing, but loud. He and his friend walked toward their car when they saw eyes staring at them. Then a full-grown mountain lion walked out of the bushes and across the road less than 30 feet from the hikers before heading up to high ground, says Smith. The hikers kept their cool walking backwards toward a road, where they called an Uber driver to give them a lift back to their car. They also had mace just in case, but didn't need to use it. Mountain lions regularly stroll through the park, though they are rarely seen by visitors. While it's a thrill to see one of these big cats, which are protected under California law, it's also a situation that can be risky, especially in the evening. The Mountain Lion Foundation offers these tips in case you encounter a mountain lion. Look bigger. Make yourself appear larger by raising your arms slowly and opening your jacket. Leash in pets, pick up children, and stand close to other adults. Make noise. Yell, shout, or bang your walking stick against a tree. Speak slowly, firmly, and loudly to disrupt and discourage predatory behavior. Act like a predator yourself by maintaining eye contact. Never run past or from a mountain lion, and never turn your back, bend over, or crouch down, since mountain lions typically attack from behind. Slowly create distance. Assess the situation. Consider whether you may be between the lion and its kittens or between the lion and its prey or kill. Back slowly to a spot that gives the mountain lion a path to get away, never turning away from the animal. Protect yourself. If attacked, fight back. Protect your neck and throat. People have utilized rocks, jackets, garden tools, tree branches, walking sticks, fanny packs, and even bare hands to turn away cougars. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Ed Barena.
Welcome to East County Magazine Show's Jobs Talk, bringing you news about great jobs, job training opportunities, and growing our regional economy.
This is Leon Thompson on East County Magazine's Jobs Talk. A bill to protect grocery store workers from being fired because of changes in store ownership has been approved by the full state Senate with a 22-14 vote. Assembly Bill 359, authored by San Diego Democrat Assemblymember Lorena Gonzalez, previously passed the Assembly and will now be submitted to Governor Jerry Brown for signature. Gonzalez calls the vote a win for middle-class workers. The measure has support of labor unions seeking to protect workers' jobs, but was opposed by the California Chamber of Commerce, which dubbed it a job-killer bill for employers. AB 359 protects grocery workers working in stores of at least 15,000 square feet from being fired during a 90-day transition period if the grocery store is undergoing a change of ownership. After that transition, the new employer must provide a written performance evaluation and offer continued employment if the evaluation is satisfactory. Employers would retain the right to terminate an employee for cause at any time during and following the transition period. The cities of San Francisco, Santa Monica, and Los Angeles have adopted local ordinances containing similar protections to retain workers. AB 359 would not be the first worker retention bill of its kind in California, since janitorial maintenance employees are currently protected during a change of contractor at a worksite under the Displaced Janitor Opportunity Act, passed in 2001. Assemblymember Gonzalez says, grocery jobs are anchors in our community that sustain the middle class and provide a connection between the neighborhood and the food they feed their families. She adds that her bill keeps the most skilled workers on the job, even through high-level Wall Street wheeling and dealing. AB 359 was presented on the Senate floor by Senator Connie Ann Leyva, who helped pay her way through college as a grocery store employee until a corporate takeover of the grocery store chain she worked for left her without a job. Leyva says AB 359 creates a common sense protection for grocery workers during a difficult time of transition that helps to strengthen California families and communities. But the California Chamber of Commerce argues that the bill inappropriately alters the employment relationship and increases frivolous litigation by requiring employers to keep employees after a merger unless the employee has an unsatisfactory job evaluation. A summary by the Chamber states AB 359 unfairly forces grocery employers to hire a predecessor's employees, undermines the at-will employment presumption in California, and ensures continued union representation despite any changes by the employers. The Chamber contends that the measure also discourages investment in grocery establishments and jeopardizes jobs. California currently has over 383,000 employees of large grocery stores who could be protected from losing their jobs during large grocery mergers if AB 359 is signed into law.
Undocumented immigrants who had hoped to get Medi-Cal coverage this year will have to wait, but they may be able to buy into plans on the Covered California Exchange. The scaled-back version of State Senate Bill 4 passed the Assembly Committee on Health Tuesday. Amparo Seed with California Rural Legal Assistance says the new version of the bill simply directs the state to ask the feds for permission to let undocumented immigrants buy coverage through the state exchange with their own money, meaning no subsidies, something that is forbidden right now under the Affordable Care Act.
For certain families, being able to utilize the marketplace to purchase health insurance might be beneficial. It's probably still unaffordable, but it's a step.
The original version of the so-called Health for All bill, which passed the state Senate last month, would have opened up Medi-Cal to adult undocumented immigrants. But that part of the bill was dropped due to cost concerns. It's expected to be reintroduced in 2016. The state budget, passed last month, did include $40 million to extend Medi-Cal coverage to all income-eligible children, regardless of immigration status, a move Seed says her group applauds.
It's absolutely historic. It's absolutely a community victory that in California, we are saying that individuals matter.
This is the last week for bills to be heard before the end of the summer session. So several other health care measures will get committee hearings, including bills to require updated health provider directories, limit out-of-pocket prescription costs, and stop surprise billing from out-of-network providers. For Public News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's radio show. We extend our appreciation to the East County Wellness Center for our studio space, to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County and Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technicians, Leon Thompson and Ed Barena, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, A.K. Jules. We also thank the County of San Diego for a community enhancement grant to support our Destination East County segment. If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.